The career politician moniker is not a popular one at the moment, on the left or the right. People are sick of these people that are making a career out of being politicians and getting rich doing so. And so I think that really, I mean, that's what surprised me most, because I thought that I'd have a lot of people tell me, hey, why don't you just wait till she retires? But there, people want change. You know, even like, I mean, I can't sit here and tell you that I'm going to be the most amazing legislator in the world, because I haven't legislated before besides on the school board level. You know, so, I mean, I think that really they just don't like the way things are going, and they're ready for a change.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics podcast and show, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and we're going to continue today to talk with candidates coming up in the Illinois primary scheduled on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. It's coming right up. We've got a lot of races, primary races, important races on both sides of the ballot people need to be aware of. And I'm very pleased to have as my guest today a candidate for state representative in the 94th district on the Republican ticket. He's never run for state office before, but I think he's got an interesting background and story to share with our listeners today. His name is Josh Higgins. And Josh, welcome to Heartland Politics.
Thank you for having me.
You got an interesting background. Instead of me going on and on about it, why don't you just take a couple minutes first, introduce yourself to our listeners about your background, and then why you're running for state representative.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Biggsville, Illinois. I actually went to Union High School, which is now West Central. I played a couple years of college baseball and decided after a couple years that I was going to make my way to the Air Force. So I enlisted in the Air Force in 2007. I went in as open general, and I ended up being an aircraft mechanic, a crew chief. I was a crew chief on the AC-130U gunships for about 5 years. When I first joined the Air Force, my girlfriend from high school, her name's Lindsay, and I asked her to come on down. I said, why don't you come down and stay with me and let's get married. And so that's really the story on how Lindsay and I got married. So we got married in 2008, in January 2008. A couple of weeks ago, we celebrated our 18th wedding anniversary. We have three kiddos. We have a 16-year-old daughter, a 9-year-old daughter, and we have a 1-year-old son. So we spread them out so we can enjoy the fun for as long as possible. but anyway, we moved to Florida together. Obviously, Lily was born not too long after that, but about halfway through my career in the Air Force, after deployment to Kandahar and Bagram, I decided I want to do something a little bit different, so I cross-trained into intelligence. I became a geospatial intelligence analyst, which is a super cool way of saying that I'd monitor drone feed, monitor satellite imagery, make call-outs for the guys on the ground. The nice thing about being and intelligence is obviously you don't have to deploy as much. You can do a lot of your work happens from home station. So I was stationed about 20 miles north of Sacramento at Beale Air Force Base. And I did the rest of my time there. And about 6 months before I was going to discharge, they offer this program. It's called SkillBridge. And SkillBridge, so I got to come back and work with my stepdad's insurance company for 6 months, kind of learn the ropes. You can't get paid, but it's a nice way to transition into the civilian world. And transitioning from intelligence to crop insurance was quite the change for me. So I got back here. I officially finished up in the military in February of 2019, and then so obviously jumped right into COVID. I kind of just the backstory of why I kind of got into politics is during COVID. I had a disagreement with our school board over masks, just because my younger daughter was in that learning period where she really needed to see her teacher's mouth. And I was like, Matt. And so I fought pretty hard against the school board, organized a school board meeting where we had about 250, 300 people. We ended up getting the school board to agree to not put masks on our children. Now, obviously, the state came back and said, gave all their threats that they were given during that time. And they ended up ended up going against it, but that made me decide to run for school board. I was on the precinct. I was a precinct committeeman at the time, and that made me decide I was going to do school board. So I ran for school board, and I've been on school board for a couple of years. And to be honest with you, I've always thought about politics. I've always kind of stayed engaged. I haven't stayed engaged state-wise as much as I should have. Being a precinct committeeman made me focus more on state, obviously. But then when kind of really what got me spinning, you know, got me spun into high gear was when Charlie Kirk was assassinated. I mean, I did feel like it was an attack on free speech and religion, and faith is important to me. So that was kind of the precipice for me to jump into the fray. And, you know, now I'm about 4 months into it, and it's definitely been a learning experience, but I really do feel like I have the opportunity to make Illinois a better place for my children. If they, you know, if they go off to college and in another state and they want to come back home, I want it to be a state that, you know, has a lot of opportunity for young people. And I feel like right now it's kind of, we're kind of struggling with that as a state. But yeah, that's, and now we're here.
and you're off. So I want to start off by just asking, I know you're in setting this interview up, we talked a couple times and you're really busy getting around the district, talking to people. It's a huge district. It's not geographically convenient for a candidate. So I know you're spending a lot of time out, but what are you hearing from people on the ground? I mean, you've got your own reasons for running, you just said, but then you get into this, and I know I ran for office one time. Then you get out and hear people talk about it in their own words. What are they concerned about right now? What are you hearing?
I would say, obviously, you know, we live in a very conservative district. So, I mean, the first thing that most of them say is something that obviously I have no power over. And it's like, we have to get rid of our governor. That I will say that's one of the very first things people say. Now, when they talk about personally, the things that they really believe are affecting them is taxes, obviously comes up right away. But I would say that what more than taxes is the energy crisis. I really feel like that people are hurting. I mean, I know I can speak from experience that, you know, I never really had a power bill here in Illinois over $250. And this last summer, I mean, I had some $600 power bills. So it's, you know, a lot of it has to do with the fact that we had a brand new baby and we were keeping it, you know, a little bit cooler than we usually do, or keeping it a little bit warmer in the winter than we usually did. But I mean, it's a lot of people are feeling it. You talk to small business owners and, you know, I have a buddy that owns the building we have in the restaurant Stronghurst here. And I mean, they're looking at 40% increases this last summer. And I think that really that's something that really hits people pretty hard. And the last thing I'll say is I do think that there's still the appetite for school choice. I mean, I there really is. I mean, it seems like a lot of people just, they want to have more decisions when it comes to, more involved in the decisions for their kids. And whether you agree or disagree with that, I mean, people can make an argument either way. But I do think that parents have that right. I mean, I think that once you get into college, parents are kind of hands off, and that's when it's time for the kids to really, or the students to really do everything on their own. But, and, you know, when they're 18 or younger, I mean, it's they're living at home. The parents are a big part of their lives and they should be involved in every decision. So, now, I will say on the flip side of that, being on the school board, I wish more parents would be more involved all the time anyway. So because I think that would help. That would help in general. But yeah.
OK,
can I say something?
Sure.
As far as the campaign?
Absolutely.
I really expected a lot of pushback for me running because Noreen Hammond has been there for so long. And but I will say that I have gotten, it's been all positive feedback. I would say 98% positive feedback. Like, and it's not all negative towards, you know, Representative Hammond. It's, you know, the career politician moniker is not a popular one at the moment on the left or the right. People are sick of these people that are making a career out of being politicians and getting rich doing so. And so I think that really, I mean, that's what surprised me the most, because I thought that I'd have a lot of people tell me, hey, why don't you just wait till she retires? But people want change. You know, even like I mean, I can't sit here and tell you that I'm going to be the most amazing legislator in the world because I haven't legislated before besides on the school board level. You know, so I mean, I think that really they just don't like the way things are going, and they're ready for a change.
Okay. Let's talk about some of those issues, just break those down. I thought you brought some interesting ones up. I got to start. It's an interesting word you use. You use the word crisis to describe the utility bill aspect. And that's interesting because when you said it, I kind of thought, wow, that's a strong word. But then I thought my bills have gone up before I got a solar array before the deadline, and that knocked my bills down. But before then, they were up $400 a month. And when it's hitting your pocketbook, it is a crisis for a lot of families, small businesses. What are you thinking about, maybe some ways to ease that? That this fits under the affordability crisis or issues we're facing. But what are some options we got for fixing this?
Well, I really think one of the main things that we have to generate more of our own electricity here in the state of Illinois. And I think that, I've had this discussion with a lot of people, and a lot of people, when you say nuclear, I mean, they automatically go to Doomsday, Chernobyl, Three Mile Island, things like that. Well, that's not the way it is. And nuclear, if let's just say that we're talking to a big group of people on the left, nuclear is the cleanest energy that there is. So I think that you could really appease both sides by getting nuclear out there because, we'll go into a topic that we didn't really talk about, but the data centers. If you have nuclear energy and you have extra power, it's going to help the data centers because they're coming whether people like it or not. Now, that doesn't help with the natural resource side of it, and nuclear also has its own burden on natural resources as well. But so that's something that we'd have to figure out. But I really do think that's the best ways to start generating our own electricity. Now, you see a lot of coal on trains rolling through Illinois every single day, but we've closed coal plants in Illinois, at a pretty high pace. And I think one of the cleanest coal plants in the entire state was actually in our district. I think Fulton County had a really clean coal plant, and they shut it down because of all the regulations that Illinois has passed. So I think that that's where it starts. And I think going back to the data centers for a second, I think that guaranteeing them the power at the expense of the taxpayer is something that we have to work out. I'm not saying that we need to regulate or we, but we do need to have more visibility in the community. We need to have town halls, and we need to talk about it because I think that's one of the biggest issues with Illinois is that, a lot of these bills and a lot of these things that are passed, they're passed at 2 a.m. and really the taxpayer has no idea they're even coming. And I think that being visible and having that opportunity to, hey, this is what's happening. Because there are avenues to have your voice heard as a taxpayer, and it's witness slips, or show up to the Capitol. I mean, there was a big homeschool issue that, I mean, they packed the Capitol and ended up not passing because people were so engaged. I think with a lot of these things that are going to put more burden on the taxpayer, if we're able to get the information out to people and have them do witness slips and show up to Springfield and things like that, I think that's how we really make real change because realistically, the Republicans are in the super minority in the House and the Senate, and that's going to be my job is to make sure that the people that I represent know what's going on so they can make their voices heard as well.
Just one follow-up on the AI center. I just read an interesting article on this. Would you support like local control, where if a company wants to come in and locate, say, in Henderson County, the final decision would still be up to the local
Yes.
folks within that township? Okay.
Yes, absolutely. I think local control is very important.
Okay. You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Josh Higgins, who's seeking the Republican nomination for the 94th District State Representative seat. This district, if you're not aware, is almost like U-shaped, and the western part comes up right into Mercer and Rock Island counties into our listening area. The primary day is March 17th. Josh has been talking a little bit about his background here, why he's running, and we've talked about some key issues, including utility costs, which he described as a crisis in the state of Illinois. I want to turn to, I'm glad you brought up the school choice issue because I'm familiar with this. I've had some guests on about it. And the choice idea seems it just seems easier for bigger cities, which have nearby schools to choose in all rural areas. We don't have that as much. How can we get better choices for parents in rural areas? Is it between public schools, private, and homeschooling? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I would say when it comes to school choice, especially for rural areas, I mean, I do believe it's an archaic way of thinking that you go to school based on where you live, right? I mean, that, you know, like you should have the choice of where you go. Now, you bring up a great topic. I mean, obviously, for where I live, you would have to open up, you know, being able to cross state lines, because we live just as close to Burlington as we do Monmouth. I mean, we are right in between Burlington and Monmouth. So, I mean, I think that would be a way to really help. And I think that the probably the issue that you're going to have with that is, if you went the voucher program like Iowa did, so where basically the money follows the student, you know, the gives to the families decide. I think that you'd have to figure out a way to make sure some of that money was coming back into Illinois, because it'd be pretty hard to convince your state government to say, hey, yeah, we're gonna be a part of this voucher program, but all the money's gonna go to Iowa. But I really do believe what's gonna happen, and it's part of the reason that I joined the school board. I thought school choice was inevitable. It seemed like it had pretty much, you know, a lot of unanimous support from the taxpayer. Not obviously, it doesn't have unanimous support from politicians, but from day-to-day people, almost unanimous support. So I, being on the school board, I'm like, man, I want our school to be that school of choice. Because really what it's going to do is it's going to force people to be better. I mean, if schools are struggling, you're going to lose enrollment. You know, and I do think that you would have the appetite for some of these people that have some money and the ability and the want to and the values to start these charter schools. I think that they would probably do that. I mean, I've had discussions with three or four people over the past 5 or 6 years that have discussed it. Now, obviously, in Illinois, it makes it difficult. I mean, it is difficult here. But I think the first thing we have to do to start is something that's going to cost Illinois no money. And it's going to opt into the federal school choice executive order that opens up a lot of already funded federal grants that would help the state. And then honestly, in turn, it could ease some burden on the taxpayers, because right now, I mean, as I'm sure you know, I mean, we're about in these rural communities, we about 65% of the funding comes from property taxes, you know, so and that's unsustainable, because being on the local school board, I've witnessed firsthand. I mean, the state brings down these unfunded mandates or even they're funded for a year and they're like, you need to implement these. And guess what? Guess who's left holding the bill at the end? The school is. And so you have a choice. You can either raise property taxes and pay for these things, or, you know, you just keep going further and further in debt, you know, and rural schools are, it almost seems to me like the state is pushing for another round of consolidations. That's what it seems to me. It seems to me over the next 10 years, they want it to be a Warren County, Henderson County school. I'll go to athletics for a second. It's just like, I think that we're going to get to a point where there's going to be one class of athletics, because they just want people to keep consolidating. So there's less and less schools. And I don't remember the exact number, but I did hear a pretty crazy number the other day that in Florida, there was like a 10th of the school districts that there are in Illinois, you know? And so maybe that's the right way to go, but I think school choice is important, because I think the parents should have the final say in their children's education, and parents should want the final say in their children's education. We need to stop treating these public schools like babysitting centers, and we need to, you know, that, because that's a lot of parents, that's what it is. They just want to send their kid to school and at the end of the day have them come home. But I want parents more involved at every level.
I think one of the interesting things that I know you've approached an initiative as a school board member that I think has some applications at the state level is your passion for health and student nutrition. Can you share a little bit about what you've done and then maybe your vision for what you could do as a legislator in that area?
For sure. Yeah. I've pushed very hard as a school board member when it comes to nutrition and physical education, personal fitness, things like that. And I really do think that it's, you know, it's kind of twofold. As far as the legislator, I'll answer that first, and then I'll kind of go into really what I believe about this. As a legislator, I think that it'd be very, very easy to develop relationships with these local hospitals like Graham in our district, or even Eagle View, some of these smaller ones. And I'm not saying every single day have a class, but I mean, once a week having these members of the medical community come in and say, hey, like, here's how you take care of your body. Here's what you should be eating. Because, you know, one of the big issues is healthcare costs, you know, and also the burden on our healthcare system. We spend the most money in the United States on healthcare, and we're the sickest country in the world. You know, so I think that if you were able to be proactive instead of reactive when it comes to health, and teach these people, these students very young, like, and the problem is a lot of times we just focus on the athletes, right? This needs to focus on every single student. Like, this, you get one body. Now, I'm obviously a Christian. God gave you one body. You only get one, right? So you need to learn how to take care of it at a super young age. And a lot of these diseases that are preventable, like type 2 diabetes, which is an epidemic in the United States, I'm not saying they will cease to exist, but man, they would, the numbers would just go down drastically. And in turn, healthcare premiums would go down because you're not overflowing the system. But I push that pretty hard at our school. I mean, I do that a lot on my own. I'm a certified speed and agility coach. I charge no money. I work with hundreds of young athletes every single month, every Thursday night. I head over to Burlington and I work with the Spirit Volleyball Club. And I, you know, most of the time, the 10 through 14 year olds, I'll have 70 girls there, you know, 70 girls that I'm just teaching, you know, how to move, how to, you know, I'm going to go off on a tangent for one second, but one big thing is, you know, as far as athletes go, you know, nobody ever works on landing, right? And that's where your injuries happen. Your injuries hurt. Your injuries happen when you land. So I work on landing and things like that. And listen, I always work in nutrition because I think it's important. For the last couple of years, I've sold supplements for a supplement company. And I think that vitamins, I don't think that I know when I grew up, and I'm sure when you grew up, my parents, I took vitamin every single morning.
Still do.
So do I. Every single day. I mean, I take fish oil and vitamin D and a multivitamin, and I feel like doing those types of things and telling people those types of things, I think it could really ease the burden on the healthcare system and ease the burden on, you know, people that are paying astronomical healthcare prices, because that's another place where it's, as far as affordability goes, it's unaffordable.
I think what you've talked about too is, and the nutrition realm has aspects that could help our family farms as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I this is something that I'm not sure as a legislator where I can push this, but I mean, I do think that grants are a good tool. I know this is a little bit outside my district, but in Bushnell they have this community garden, right? To where you get fresh fruit and fresh vegetables and things like that. Man, how awesome would it be if every single small town had a community garden for these people that can't, because well, I think you and I talked a little bit about this before, but it's really, really expensive to eat healthy. It is. Yeah. You go to the store, and if you want to eat unhealthy, it's relatively cheap compared to eating healthy. So I think that if you could set up these community gardens in every single small town, I'll start in my district. Man, I just think that would really change the game. All these people have access to fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, you know, and then have some of these farmers that are doing okay, because obviously there's a lot of strain on farmers right now, but maybe, you know, have certain months or, you know, maybe once or twice a year where you're able to give away some meat and things like that. If you could get some fresh meat, fresh fruit, fresh vegetables for these people, especially these kids that their only good meal is at school, or the only real, you know, full meals at school, man, I really think that would also help with the health of our entire nation. I'm not just talking about Illinois, man. I wish this was something that was nationwide.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. And get them off the couch with some type of maybe individualized physical education program. Those are definitely intriguing ideas. I want to, I've got about, well, I got about 3 minutes left. So okay. What I like to do with candidates running for office is give them ample time at the end to kind of make a closing statement here, like in a trial, so to speak. But share with our listeners, you know, now that they've gotten to know you, hear what you're about, and we're going to put this out, you know, it'll be broadcast and on social media and all. But why should a voter going to the polls, Republican voter in the primary, support you? Give your closing statement here in about 3 minutes.
Well, I would say that as far as our district goes, I mean, I am a conservative and I'm going to vote conservative 100% of the time. But the reason that I think that people should vote for me is because I was in the Air Force for 12 years, you know, 5 years as a mechanic and six plus years as an intelligence analyst. And that really instilled a lot of discipline and ability to work under pressure. And obviously going to Springfield, working under pressure is going to be something that's paramount. And I think that I have the tools. I think that I have the personality. And really, I think that I have the ability to be loud enough to make sure that everyone is actually finding out what is happening before it happens, so we can really help. And citizens are supposed to be involved in every single aspect of government. And it seems like that's kind of gone to the wayside. And I think that really getting back to the point where people know what's going on and they're able to have their voices heard, like I said earlier, through witness slips or showing up to the Capitol. I mean, I think that I'm the guy that can do that. I'm not going to sit back and collect a paycheck and go along to get along. I'm going to be a vessel for change, you know, in every aspect that we talk about today. And I'm sure more that we didn't talk about. But really, I just think that the things are not going great in Illinois. And I hear it every day walking around the district. We need something to change. Well, I'm running against a politician who's been in Springfield for 30 years between a legislative aide and a state representative. So I think it's time for a change. Let's see if something different works. And what's the worst? The worst that can happen is nothing gets better. But I promise that won't be for lack of trying on my part.
Okay. Josh Higgins has been my guest today on Heartland Politics. He lives in Henderson County, is running for the 94th District State Representative seat in the Republican primary on March 17th. I encourage everybody listening, of course, to go vote. Exercise your right to go vote in that election. There are some important races on both sides of the aisle in these primaries, and we live in very important times, so voting is critical. So we've heard from both candidates here, and again, I encourage folks to go vote. And Josh, I want to thank you again for taking the time to be my guest today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.